It started with the rain, one of those indecisive drizzles that taps the roof like fingers too polite to knock properly, the kind that turns the world into a grainy black and white movie, half-seen shapes under streetlights, fogged-up windows, a soundscape of distant tires on wet pavement. I was sprawled out on the leather couch in the family room, feet on the ottoman, half a beer left on the side table. Stranger Things was on. My wife, Natalie, was out that night. Drinks with college friends she hadn't seen in a year. She kissed me quick before leaving, lipstick faint and sharp like cinnamon on my cheek. She smelled like sandalwood and hotel sheets. Told me not to wait up, but you know how that goes. You wait anyway. I was half watching the screen, half scrolling through memories when I heard it. First, the tires. The familiar crunch of her Civic rolling up our gravel driveway. Then, the engine clicked off. Car door opened, slammed shut. Footsteps, wet soles on concrete, the metallic screech of the screen door hinges. My heart reacted before my mind did. Recognition on a bone-deep level. That was her. It had to be her. But she didn't come in. I waited, remote in hand, staring at the foyer just out of sight. A minute passed, then another. "Natalie?" I called out. Silence. No rustle of her coat, no thunk of keys in the bowl. No click of her heels on hardwood. I stood, a tension rolling down my spine like static electricity. Made my way to the front door. Nothing. Her car wasn't in the driveway. The screen door was shut. Still, the porch light reflected nothing but glistening puddles and the slow slant of rain. I stepped out into the cold. The air had that post-midnight taste. Wet asphalt, pine, something metallic. No tire marks. No footprints on the walkway. Nothing. I went back inside, locked the door, and laughed. Nervous, throat tight. "Good one, brain," I muttered. "Really imaginative tonight." I chalked it up to a tired mind and suggestive television. Maybe I'd fallen asleep for a minute. Maybe I dreamt it. Maybe thud from upstairs. I froze. It wasn't a loud thud, but it had weight. Like a dropped boot, or a person shifting. The house was dark upstairs. Natalie's bedroom lamp had a soft amber glow triggered by motion, but it didn't flicker on. Just that murky hallway, and the open door of our room at the end, barely visible. I didn't move. Not right away. And then the absurdity of it broke through the fog. "It's your own damn house," I reminded myself. "What the hell are you afraid of?" I started up the stairs. Each creak underfoot echoed louder than it should have. I reached the landing and peered down the hall. The bedroom was empty, but the window was open. That window's latch was always stuck. Natalie used to curse it every spring. And tonight, it was wide open, letting in the soft whoosh of rain and wind. A breeze swept through the curtains, lifting them like arms in slow motion. I walked to the window and stared out into the backyard. Still, no movement, no animals, just the swing set creaking slightly, a leftover from when her sister's kids visited last summer. But when I returned to the living room, something else was off. The beer was gone, the remote was on the floor, and a single red lipstick kiss, fresh, marked the rim of my glass. I didn't sleep. I stayed up on the couch. Blanket over me like armor. The TV was off. I didn't want noise anymore. I listened all night. Natalie got home around 3 a.m., laughing as she fumbled with the keys. She pushed open the door and blinked when she saw me awake. "Did I wake you?" she asked, stepping inside, shaking rain from her hair. "You didn't just get home." "What?" "I heard you earlier. I heard your car. I heard you walk in, but then nothing." She gave me a look, not concerned, not skeptical, just tired. "I told you not to wait up," she said, walking past me toward the stairs. "Wait, Nat." I followed, breath quick. "Did you come home earlier and leave again?" She paused mid-step. "No. Why would I?" I didn't have an answer. She looked at me, finally registering the tension on my face. Her tone shifted, softer. "Hey." She said, "You okay?" I stared at her, so real, so there. but my body still held the echo of that kiss on the glass, the warmth of her voice behind me, and the open window. "I think someone was in the house," I whispered. She stopped. "What? Like, someone broke in?" I nodded. "But not like that. I mean, it felt like you. Like you were here, but not." She stepped closer. "Did you see anyone?" "No." "Then maybe," she said slowly, "you just missed me a little too much." Her voice dropped. "Or maybe you were hoping I'd come home early." There it was, the familiar flirt, low, dangerous, like fire licking too close to curtains. "Natalie, don't," I said, but my voice didn't have the weight it should. She leaned in, whispered, "Did you imagine me doing something I shouldn't?" "I'm sorry," I muttered. "It's just, I feel off, that's all." She studied me. Her lips were pink, not red, no trace of lipstick. "Okay," she said, stepping away. The next morning, I found muddy footprints outside the back door, leading out of the house. That night, I couldn't shake the thought, what if it was Natalie? Not the one who came home at 3 a.m., the other one. The one who kissed the rim of my glass. The house felt too still the next day, like it was holding its breath. Natalie had already left for work, humming in the hallway mirror, her perfume clinging to the walls. I stayed behind, staring out the window like the backyard held answers. The muddy footprints were still there, half faded, leading out from the back door. Something told me to check the bedroom closet. Not rational, not even conscious. The closet creaked open, smelling faintly of mothballs, winter coats, and something older. Natalie's college trunk sat in the back, under some scarves and a shoebox full of old Polaroids. I'd never opened the trunk. It was hers, and she never mentioned it. Some things just sit in your house, like furniture. You forget they have stories. I lifted the lid. Inside, old yearbooks, handwritten notes folded into squares, a dried bouquet tied with ribbon, and a single, dusty manila envelope tucked beneath a cracked leather journal. I pulled it out. My name was on the front, for when it's too late. My stomach dropped. I tore it open. A photo fell out first. Natalie, clearly younger, standing beside a girl with the same smile, the same eyes, the same curve of cheek. But something was off. The girl next to her had a thin scar over her top lip, slicing through the smile like a warning. On the back, scrawled in faded ink, "Sorry I never told you, babe. Be careful. Do not let her in. Ever." My hands trembled. I sat down on the edge of the bed, the photo in one hand, the letter in the other. There was more written inside. "Her name is Leela. She's my twin. We were separated at 16. Mom said she was unstable, but I didn't believe her. She had this way of mimicking people too well. Not just copying, but becoming. She'd steal clothes, voices, habits, then lie so convincingly you forgot she wasn't who she claimed to be. She made me feel like I was the fake one. One night she kissed my boyfriend and then told him that I was the one who'd kissed him. He believed her. She disappeared after that. They said that she'd been sent away for help. I got one call from her years later. Drunk or high or just crazy. She said, 'You'll never be safe, Nat. I'll always know how to be you. I never told you because I didn't think she'd find me. But if you're reading this, then something's wrong, and you already know. She wants you. That's how she replaces me.'" I reread the letter three times. My fingers dug into the paper like it might vanish. Then I heard the sound, a creak, from downstairs. I stood slowly, like prey sensing the movement of something bigger, the kind of creak that didn't come from a floorboard, but a hinge, a door opening, somewhere near the living room. I pocketed the photo and crept toward the staircase. Halfway down, I paused. She was in the kitchen, back turned to me, wet hair falling down her back, red lipstick, a wine glass in hand. She turned as if she knew I was there.
Hey, babe.
She smiled.
You left your beer out last night.
My mouth went dry. Natalie had left at 8 a.m. I heard her keys, her car, but here she was, again, standing in my kitchen. I thought you went to work. She tilted her head, that same flirtatious tilt I knew, had memorized.
I did. Changed my mind.
Let me see your lip, I said suddenly. She blinked.
What?
Your lip, I repeated. Take off the lipstick. She stared at me. The smile twitched, then reset.
You're being weird.
I'm not joking. Wipe it off. She walked toward me slowly, each step echoing across the hardwood. Then she licked her lips, red smeared across her teeth.
You liked it last night.
My chest clenched. That was it. Natalie hadn't kissed me last night, but someone had. I know who you are, I whispered.
Do you, though?
I backed up the stairs. Stay where you are! She followed, leisurely, confident, like she'd already been here before. I reached our bedroom, slammed the door, and locked it. My hand went to my phone. No signal. Rain started again, tapping the roof with those same soft fingers. Down the hallway, I heard her nails skimming the wall. She was humming now, a lullaby. One I'd never heard Natalie hum in her life.
Don't be scared,
she cooed from behind the door.
I know all your favorite things. I can be softer, sweeter. I don't have to leave you at night like she does.
I looked around the room, breathing hard. The photo was still in my pocket. I pulled it out, held it like a cross. Outside, the wind howled. Then, silence. Nothing at the door. I waited 5 minutes. 10. Then, a knock. Not urgent, just polite. Then, her voice again, gentle, almost hurt.
Let me in, babe. You know I love you. Always have.
I didn't answer. I sat on the floor, staring at the door like it might dissolve. The knocking stopped. The house went quiet. Too quiet. And then I remembered the letter.
Do not let her in. Ever.
That was a week ago. Natalie didn't come back home from work that day. I reported to the police and they're searching for her. Her twin hasn't showed up either. I don't know what to do. I'm just crying. This story is inspired from a real-life incident which happened with one of our subscribers. This is what they said happened. One night, my wife was out with friends and I was home watching some crime show on TV. Probably not the best choice for an overactive mind. I clearly heard her car pull in, the door shut, footsteps, and the screen door creak open. But she didn't come in. After a minute, I got up to check. Her car wasn't there. The door was closed. No one outside. No time had passed for anyone to leave. And I didn't hear a thing. It freaked me out, because I know what I heard.
The rain hadn't let up since morning. Thin sheets of it sliding down the windows, glossing the streets in a wet shimmer that made everything look just slightly unreal. My girlfriend, Lex, and I had been curled up on her futon watching reruns of True Blood all afternoon. The smell of cinnamon candles and buttery popcorn thickened the air. It should have been the kind of lazy Sunday we remember fondly. Except we ran out of snacks. I need chocolate, she said, pulling on her hoodie. The walk to Cal's Mini Mart was only 4 blocks down, right past the old diner and across from the boarded-up theater. The streets were mostly empty, except for the soft splash of passing cars and a man walking maybe 30 feet behind us. He looked about mid-40s, a little scruffy, dark coat, hood up. I wouldn't have noticed him if he hadn't been talking to himself. You hear that? I asked, tilting my head back toward him. Lex shrugged. Probably just some guy trying to stay dry. But the voice carried. Low, rhythmic, muttering like a chant. We kept moving. Inside the mini mart, the harsh fluorescent lights buzzed overhead. I was busy loading up on sour gummies and red vines while Lex giggled over a giant bag of caramel popcorn. She leaned into me, whispering, "We could get messy with this tonight." Her breath was warm against my ear. I smiled. That's when I saw him again. He was outside, standing under the awning, just staring. Not moving, not blinking, just watching through the glass. I tensed up. "Lex, that guy's still here." She glanced out. "He's gone now," she said. And she was right. Just like that, he'd vanished. My girlfriend is super pretty with the perfect curves, so I have to be extra cautious when I'm out with her. We stepped out and debated heading straight back. But Lex wanted a chai latte from Luna Bean, the indie coffee shop down the street. We ducked inside, shook the water off our jackets, and placed our order. Lex touched my hand. "You good?" "Yeah," I lied. Because there he was again, across the street this time, standing under the laundromat sign, like he was posing for a crime scene photo. His gaze locked on us, heavy as a hand on the back of my neck. Lex caught me staring. "Jesus, he is watching us." She slid closer. "Let's leave the moment we get our drinks." We did. But just as we turned, his voice split through the room.
"Hey, there you are!"
People turned. My spine stiffened. He walked toward us, calm, confident.
"That's my niece and son. I told them not to leave the apartment without me."
The entire room froze. My hand found Lex's. She looked up at me, and in that moment, I didn't have to say a word. We booked it out of there. Our footsteps slapped the sidewalk. We didn't speak, just moved. Every breath was steam. Behind us, the sound of slow, deliberate footsteps followed. I dared to look. He was still behind us, not running, just walking, like he knew we'd tire before he did. Smiling, Lex gripped my hand tighter. "This isn't some misunderstanding. He knows we're scared. He's enjoying it." The streets grew darker the closer we got to our neighborhood. Street lamps thinned out. Houses disappeared behind rows of hedges. It was just us and the sound of wet shoes on pavement. We turned a corner. Nothing but a stretch of sidewalk leading to the park, which was pitch black and sloping downhill. "We shouldn't have gone this way," I muttered. "He's speeding up," Lex hissed. That's when we ran. Full tilt, no coordination, just raw panic. His voice tore the air behind us.
"Don't go! Don't you want to play?"
My stomach turned. Lex nearly tripped on the curb, but I caught her. Then headlights flicked on up the street. A white Ford slowed down as we waved frantically, shouting. The car stopped. A guy, maybe mid-30s, stepped out. Ball cap, black hoodie, a takeout bag in his hand.
"What's going on?"
he asked. Lex barely got the words out.
"He's been following us. He said we were his son and niece, but we're not. He's behind us."
The man's gaze lifted. The creep rounded the corner. This time he didn't stop. He walked right up until the guy stepped between us.
"Back the fuck off,"
the man said. The creep tilted his head like a curious dog. Then he smiled. That same oily grin that had haunted us all night.
"You're gonna regret this. These little gummies belong to me," he said.
I felt Lex tighten against me. The man didn't move. "Try it. Just try it." For a second, it felt like something might break. Then the creep laughed, short and sharp, and turned around. And just like that, he walked off into the dark. A stranger drove us the rest of the way, trailing slow behind as we walked the final few feet to Lex's gate.
"You should have called the cops," he said.
I nodded. "Yeah, we panicked." He didn't press us, just gave a tight nod and waited until we were behind the door before driving off. Inside, Lex collapsed onto the couch. Her hair clung to her face in wet tendrils. "You think he was gonna hurt us?" "No," I said. "I think he would have done worse." Neither of us said anything for a while. I moved closer, held her hand. It trembled. The popcorn from earlier was still on the table, stale and soggy now. but we weren't hungry anymore. We got lucky that night. Maybe that's all it was. Luck and one guy who decided to stop. But sometimes, I wonder if the creep knew where we lived. If maybe he wasn't following us by chance. If maybe he picked us before we even left the house.
I always took the back roads. Quiet, dark, winding lanes that cut through northern Pennsylvania like forgotten veins. They shaved a good 10 minutes off my commute, and most nights offered a kind of peace. But that winter night was different. The kind of cold that gets under your skin. No moon, no sound, just the hum of my engine and the occasional crackle of ice under the tires. Halfway through the drive, I saw it. A cat, or so I thought, right in the center of the road. Frozen in place. Its eyes caught the glare of my headlights. Wide and eerily human. Poor thing, I muttered, flipping on the hazards. I stepped out, breath fogging the air, my boots crunching on frozen gravel. As I got closer, I realized something was off. It wasn't breathing. The fur didn't move with the wind. And then it hit me. It was a toy. Stuffed. Deliberately placed. I laughed nervously. Crouched and tossed it off the road. The moment I turned back to my car, I felt headlights light up my back. A van. White. Loud engine. The driver leaned on the horn. What the hell? I whispered. The van idled inches behind my bumper. The man inside was huge, bearded, and pounding on the wheel, yelling something I couldn't hear. He gestured violently, arms flailing like windmills, and pointed at me. At my car. I panicked. I jumped in, slammed the door, and sped off. My hands were shaking as I tried to punch in my dad's number. Hello? Dad? Someone's following me. A van. He was yelling. I don't know what. Drive home. Don't stop. Just drive. I'll be outside waiting. He hung up. No time for questions. The van stayed behind me. Never tried to overtake. Just stayed close enough that I could see his face twisted in rage every time I glanced in the rear view. I flew through stop signs, red lights, past silent farmhouses with no street lamps. It felt like running from a bear. When I reached our driveway, I didn't brake softly, I skidded. I flung the door open, ran screaming for my dad, who was already on the porch. Behind me! The van screeched to a halt. The man jumped out. My dad didn't hesitate. He met him halfway with a rusty wrench in hand and slammed it across the guy's jaw. The sound was sickening. Bone on metal. The man dropped instantly. We were both breathing hard. My dad, knuckles bleeding, looked at the stranger sprawled on the gravel. You okay? I nodded, dizzy.
I don't know what he wanted. He was just screaming.
Something caught my dad's eye. He stared at my car. Your trunk. It was slightly ajar, just a sliver. Neither of us moved for a second. Then, he stepped forward and yanked it open, and everything stopped. A man, thin, pale, with wide, twitchy eyes, sprang out like a coiled snake. His body was smeared with what looked like ash or soot. He hissed as he ran, a blur disappearing into the night. My knees buckled. The man in the van? He'd been trying to warn me. We called the cops. The one my dad had knocked out was still breathing. Broken jaw, probably a concussion. But he came to, muttering,
There was someone in the trunk. I saw him climb in. I followed. I tried.
He tried to save me. For the next few days, I couldn't stop replaying it. How long had the diaper man been in there? What would he have done if I'd driven all the way home and gone straight to bed, leaving the trunk shut? But it didn't end there. A week later, my dad went out to check the crawl space under the deck looking for a leak. He came back up holding a ragged hoodie. You recognize this? I didn't. It wasn't here before. We installed motion cameras the same day. That night, at 3:17 a.m., the alert pinged. We watched the footage in silence. A figure crawled across the backyard. Thin, trembling. Still wearing the diaper. He reached the side of the house, touched the wall like it was something sacred, and just stood there for 30 full minutes, then walked off. The police weren't helpful. No ID on the guy. No record. No leads. A month later, I was in the grocery store when I saw her. A little girl, maybe 10, standing alone in the candy aisle. Something about her eyes struck me. Wide, eerily familiar. She looked up at me, smiled, and held out a toy. A stuffed cat. I froze. "Where did you get that?" She pointed toward the exit.
"He gave it to me."
I dropped the groceries and ran. Outside, there was no sign of him. No van, no diaper man, just wind and dusk. When I turned back, the girl was gone too. I never told my dad about that moment. This story was shared by one of our subscribers. In the real-life scenario, her dad didn't hit the van guy. He was able to warn them, but the diaper man ran off, never to be seen again.
I hate my birthday. Always have. Birthdays are meant to be a celebration of someone in their life, but somehow, mine always ended up being about my little brother. This persisted into adulthood. The conversation always revolves around him and what he's doing. I'm lucky even to be acknowledged. Since this is how my birthday goes, I always feel small and worthless. After fading into the background of my own birthday year after year, I decided to celebrate by taking a solo vacation to a mountain spa resort. The night before I left for the resort, I told my mom my itinerary. She wasn't happy I was celebrating by myself and disagreed that my birthday always ends up being about my brother. She started harping on me about it, so I had to ask if she wanted to hear what I was doing or not. She said yes, because it's the only way she can feel involved. I rolled my eyes. I told her I would leave for work on Friday and get to the resort later. I planned to order food and just hang out in the hotel room. Saturday was my spa day. I would spend my birthday being pampered like a queen, far away from my phone. For Sunday, I planned to check out and do an easy hike before heading back to the city. My mom wasn't all that excited for me, but it wasn't her birthday. I remember feeling so much peace as I rolled up to the resort. It was nestled deep in the mountains, and you could see the snow-covered peaks in the distance. It was the beginning of summer, so I was surprised to see that there was still some snow on them. I felt so far away from the drama my family was trying to cause and the hustle of my day-to-day life. Inside of the resort added to my peace. It smelled of fresh wood and was decorated like a cabin. Although it was huge, it felt quaint and cozy. A lady was complaining about the lack of towels that I had to wait behind her before I could check in. I couldn't help but notice the man who came in after me. He stood about a head taller than me and had dark curly hair. There felt like electricity between us as he waited behind me. The lady got her towels and I stepped up to check in. The lady was kind and gave me my room key quickly. I thanked her, and as I turned, I bumped into the gorgeous tall man behind me. "Oh, sorry," I said. I looked up at him, and he had friendly brown eyes that sparkled a bit. "It's okay. I don't mind beautiful women bumping into me." He flashed his big white smile at me, revealing his dimples. I laughed nervously, not knowing how to react. I don't get hit on very often. I bent over to start gathering my stuff, and he helped. "This might be a long shot, and I know it's late, but is there any chance you would want to grab something to eat with me after I check in?" Blood rushed to my cheeks. "Yeah, I could do that. I was just going to eat alone in my room anyway, so some company might be nice." I smiled at him. "Great. Want to meet down here in 45 minutes? I nodded and told him I'd see him in a bit. "What's your name?" I asked before leaving. "Adam. And yours?" "Steph." "I'll see you soon, Steph." He smiled at me one more time. We met in the lobby and he told me he found this Mexican joint with good reviews. I told him how great that sounded, since Mexican is my favorite. I mentioned to him that I was on my birthday vacation. So Adam told the waitress to get free desserts and to ask her not to come out singing because he thought it might make me uncomfortable. I kept being stunned by how he guessed everything right. He ordered a bottle of red wine, which happened to be my favorite. When I eat out at Mexican places, I switch off getting enchiladas and chile rellenos. I got enchiladas last time I was out, and that's what he ordered. I was able to have a bite of my two favorite dishes. We got along so well, too. Adam was a photographer. He was in the mountains to get some nature shots. We had so much in common. I was convinced we had the potential to go somewhere. I almost asked him back to my room, but I didn't want to rush things. Before we said goodnight, we exchanged numbers. He told me he hoped to run into me again before he left. The following day, I woke up, brushed my teeth, and headed to the spa. All day, I was pampered. As they were massaging my feet and arms at the same time, I felt like I made the best decision to celebrate alone. For the first time, I felt good on my birthday. And as a bonus, I met Adam. At that moment, everything felt right. As I was leaving the spa, I saw Adam in the lobby. We stopped and chatted briefly. He invited me to dinner again, and looking into his brown eyes, I wanted so badly to say yes. Except I had a bunch of voicemails and texts I needed to answer. I couldn't block out my loved ones completely. I explained that I needed to call my friends and family, but I suggested we get dinner when we were both back in the city. His eyes lit up at the suggestion. I woke up early the next day for my hike. I planned to return to the hotel after the hike to shower, but I changed my mind. I decided to head home right after the hike. As I pulled up to the trail, I saw Adam pulling his backpack out of his car. I got out and asked him, "What are the odds?" He laughed. We hiked the trail together, stopping now and again so he could take a picture. One time, he turned the camera to me and asked me to smile. We made small talk. Adam asked what I planned to do when I returned to the city. I explained that I would have dinner with my family and how they weren't happy I chose to celebrate alone. Adam's head twitched to the side. "They don't understand how lucky they are to have you in their lives. It ticks me off." I hadn't said much about my family, so I didn't know where this came from. As we walked up to the waterfall, he said, "Like 2 years ago, when you wanted to go to that Mediterranean place for your birthday, but for some reason, you ended up going to Applebee's. Your brother isn't even that great. He's a Starbucks barista. It just ticks me off." My stomach dropped. How did he know what happened 2 years ago? I definitely didn't mention it. I acted like I didn't hear him, but my guard was up. I started thinking how he was always in the lobby right when I was. He was there when I checked in. He was there when I came out of the spa. He was even there for the hike at the same time as me. He turned to me and said he was going to get closer to snap some pictures. I told him he wouldn't want his backpack to get wet so I could hold on to it. He was hesitant but ended up giving it to me. Once he was far enough away, I unzipped it. Inside, I found snacks, rope, duct tape, a map, and a small bag containing a white powder. In the small pocket, I found pictures of me. Some looked like they were from years ago. There was one of me brushing my teeth that I have no idea how he could get, unless he hacked into my phone. I checked his wallet and took a picture of his ID. My heart was racing. I slowly put Adam's bag down and started running back down the trail. Luckily, it was a short hike, so I jogged back down to my car. About halfway through, I heard him yell my name. He yelled it again and again, getting angrier with each call out. I got to my car, got in it, and drove away. When I got to the city, I went to the police department immediately. I told them what had happened, what I had found, and his information. They told me as long as there was no assault or trespassing, there wasn't a whole lot they could do. They recommended getting a new phone and laptop because he probably hacked them, and to consider relocating. They weren't going to do anything for me. I haven't seen Adam since the waterfall, but I did what the cops told me. I got all new electronics and moved to a new place. I only told a select few where I moved to and started guarding my personal information. I look over my shoulder, check for cars following me, and look for him in grocery stores, but I still haven't seen him. I don't think I'll ever shake this uneasy feeling because he had been watching me for years without me knowing. So who's to say he's not still watching?